This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike, and today I'm joined by a voice from Trek FM past, Max.
That's who I am.
How's it going?
Okay.
Thank you very much for filling in for John while he's on his journey, his away mission to
no, it's no problem.
As I understand, stage 8, the planet Hell. I think, I don't know which one. Oh. Anyway, okay. I think actually that was stage 9, but that's paramount. It doesn't matter.
Does it matter? It doesn't matter what stage it is.
It doesn't matter.
Welcome to stage 4.
There you go.
I don't know what the format of the show is, but I assume we pick something and talk about how it's bad.
Or talk about how it's good.
That seems a lot easier.
So yeah, and that's what we're going to be doing today. We're going to be talking about an episode of the Supergirl television show, which was written by one of Star Trek Discovery's writers, Ted Sullivan, and that episode is for The Girl Who Has Everything. But before we get into that, I mean, just a little bit of news. I mean, I'm sure everyone knows, and this isn't really creator related, but you know, September 24th, that's the premiere
of the new Star Trek series.
Yes, Star Trek Discovery. Yes,
Star Trek Discovery.
And also, because we've been tracking this as well, you know, the Orville premieres 2 weeks prior.
Mm-hmm.
So on Sundays before it moves to Thursday. So we're going to get...
That's September 10th.
September 10th is the Orville. September 17th, the
Just
Orville.
Subtracted 14 from that.
Good job. September 24th is going to be Discovery with two new episodes. So that's exciting. New Star Trek on the horizon. And I'm sure everyone's read all the articles and the whatnots and all that stuff.
I've certainly read all of the articles.
Yes, I know that you have, because that really sounds like something that you would do. Mm-hmm.
We've met before.
But one little bit of info which was revealed is that one of the cinematographers on the show is going to be a guy named Glenn Keenan. And Glenn Keenan is someone who has worked on numerous television shows, probably most notably Lucifer, which is on the Fox network. He also did an episode of APB, which was on, I think, the Fox network. I'm not sure.
Oh, was it canceled?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Was it also canceled in Canada? Because I think it's a Canadian show.
I think it was canceled in Canada as well. Yeah. All right. Heroes Reborn, he did a couple episodes of Sleepy Hollow, The Tomorrow People, Nikita, he did a lot of Nikita. So yeah, he's going to be one of the cinematographers. I mean, I know that there's a number of people. Colin Holt is one, and Darren Tiernan, and then of course the pilot is shot by Guillermo Navarro, which is pretty amazing, if you ask me. Okay. That's exciting. But let's get into Supergirl. For The Girl Who Has Everything. So now, this is an episode which is adapted from a comic book written by Alan Moore and drawn by Dave Gibbons. And it's... Well, oh, and hey, just as long as you bring up Watchmen, I mean, just to bring up some Star Trek creator news, you see that Damon Lindelof is currently developing a Watchmen TV show for HBO?
No.
Eh? It's happening.
Oh.
Yeah. So, anyway, moving
on. Yeah, we need more adaptations of Watchmen. It didn't work as a comic book. They need to fix the problems inherent in Watchmen.
Well, I'm hoping
America's a joke.
Not now that I'm hoping that now that they're, you know, like, you know, bringing it into the DC universe and doing this whole crossover thing at the end of the year, I'm hoping that maybe that'll help
resolve the underlying conflicts.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so makes sense. Okay. Well, anyway, for The Man Who Has Everything, the comic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, I know that you're a huge Alan Moore fan.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm a very strong admirer of his work. And here's, you know, Moore...
Correct position to take.
Yeah, and here's Moore and Gibbons working together before Watchmen
mm-hmm.
to do a Superman comic. You wanna give sort of a synopsis or a premise for this comic?
Well, I mean, it's not super complicated, but basically it is sort of a similar plot line. I mean, there is, like, it is basically the same storyline. It's just Superman is the character instead of Supergirl. And obviously the differences being, you know, like, Krypton wasn't destroyed, that kind of thing. It's a long, complicated thing. But there's a little bit more, like, fantasy in the Superman storyline than the Supergirl storyline. Like, it has more levels. But, like, it is ultimately the same sort of thing. You know, a parasite is attached, and it's a different villain that does it, but it's because that villain doesn't exist in Supergirl continuity, so it's not that different. It's a pretty close adaptation. It's actually to the point where, like, it's basically the same story.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, subtle differences. You know, I mean, for one thing, Batman and Wonder Woman are involved.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the weird thing, because there is a point where Batman gets hit by the parasite, and that's
a kind of cool little turn there for a second, you know, because then, I mean, basically the idea behind this is, like, this parasite, you know, latches onto you and basically hypnotizes you into living out your greatest fantasies, you know, and basically it's a prison of your own making because you don't want to leave, right? Yep. And, you know, with Superman, obviously that's, Krypton didn't blow up, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he's living on Krypton doing all this stuff, and, you know, Wonder Woman and Batman show up because it's his birthday, and Robin too, Jason Todd, Robin.
Yeah, they show up at the Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah,
which they can just go to. Apparently, they can just show up there.
Yeah, yeah, and then, you know, they're gonna give him some birthday presents. Then they discover that he's got this parasite, you know, on him, and they're trying to get it off. And So what do you think about the original comic?
Well, I mean, like, there are a few things by Alan Moore where, like, the best thing I can say about them is, like, if you were going to tell that story, that's the best way you could possibly do it. Like, he writes the characters really well. It's very intricate, and all the pieces work really well. At the end of the day, it's ultimately kind of, like, not that consequential. Because really, we all kind of know what Superman's, like, innermost wish is.
Yeah.
Like, we all know. It's just like, you know, I want everyone to still be alive. It's not like a very deep, complicated inner life he's got. He's just like, people keep dying. It's like, I'm the only one that's still alive. And it's like, come on, man. Let's just stop with that.
Yeah.
That's ultimately his, like, his innermost wish is that, you know, he could have everything that he has and all the stuff he lost as well.
Yes.
Supergirl has the exact same equation.
This is the gift for the man who has everything.
Yeah, he's got everything except for all those people that died. You know, except for that one thing that people keep dying. He's got everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I do like the comic book. I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I think it's kind of considered to be a classic at this point, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure part of that has to do with the fact that it's Alan Moore writing Superman, you know, which he's only done like, what, two times or something like that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like, because Alan Moore writes it, if Alan Moore says like, when you enter the Fortress of Solitude, in order to get to the living quarters, you turn right. From then on, you turn right to get to the living quarters, and everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of thing he would actually write. He would actually write down like you have to turn right afterwards, because he writes that intricately, and there's that much like information packed into every panel.
But then when you asked him about it, like, you know, a year later, like, so why'd you have them turn right? He'd be like, the hell are you talking about? I don't even know what that means.
Well, I had to pick a direction because I write everything in like right angles and everything. So I have the door in the center of the panel, and I had to have them turn one direction or another because Dave doesn't like drawing people walking towards the virtual camera all the time. So I try to write for him. So I had them turn a direction, and I picked right.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, I enjoy the story too. You know, I think that it's good. I think that there's some. I mean, it's largely inconsequential, but I think it, you know, does sort of get into, you know, sort of like the inner thoughts and desires of Superman and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think the stuff with Wonder Woman and Batman is pretty good and pretty funny. I mean, Batman makes a special breed of rose called Krypton, and then in the fight it gets destroyed, and he's like, sorry, it kind of died. It's a metaphor, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff is good. I like the stuff with Jason Todd, who basically saves the day in this thing by sticking the plant in one of a Mongol's gloves or whatever. And, you know, I mean, all that stuff I think works relatively well. And I do like the little brief turn where, you know, the what is it called? The, like, whatever it's called, when it attaches itself to Batman, and you see his whole thing where it's like, oh, you know, my parents didn't die, you know, obviously.
The Prometheus thorn, some nonsense like that. That's what they should have done.
Yeah, it's like the dark lily or something, I don't know.
The dark lily.
Anyway, you know, he it, like that stuff is cool, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think on the whole, and I do think that it's cool to see sort of like Superman's rage when he's pulled out of it. Because, you know, like they say, like, oh, you know, it must have been like cutting off your arm, you know, to leave that paradise or whatever, you know, because he's had a taste now of the good life, and now he's got to come back to Earth, and where he's just hanging out with, you know, Jason Todd, which is kind of a letdown for anyone, I would imagine. So.
Somebody better kill that guy.
So, you know, I don't know. It's a cool story. You know, I've never considered it to be sort of like elite level Superman or elite level Alan Moore, but it's an interesting thing to see. It's in a lot of ways, it's interesting just to see how Alan Moore interprets Superman, like what it is that he's, and not nearly as good as whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow, but you know. Still an
Yeah.
interesting little thing.
You know, it's one of those things. Alan Moore did a lot of weird, you know, stories from in existing continuities, and a lot of them have sort of stuck around in weird ways.
Yeah.
The Killing Joke, people still try to make that work in continuity somehow. People keep redoing it. That's sort of the thing. They keep redoing the same story
Yeah.
because they don't want to lose it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's a thing. That's a comic book thing. And speaking of which,
It's basically in one of the Batman games now too,
is it?
so yeah,
Oh, that's
the
cool.
third of the Arkham games basically retells the story, except
And
for the whole, you know, interrogation room confessional
yeah.
scene.
And of course they just did it as a as an animated movie as well,
Yeah.
which is interesting. And you know, the for the Man Who Has Everything, that was adapted prior to Supergirl in as an episode of Justice League Unlimited,
Yeah.
which J.M. DeMatteis wrote. And that's a much more faithful adaptation, obviously, because for one thing, they maintain the character of Superman. They keep Batman and Wonder Woman as well, and they do not include Jason Todd. Unfortunately for him, I guess.
Unfortunately.
And, you know, it's a bit more streamlined in a lot of ways, but...
That kid's got enough problems. Everyone wants him dead.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's true. But in this adaptation, like, I really got the impression that, you know, the changes that were made and everything were done more than anything as sort of like a way to streamline the story, you know?
Yeah.
It's very much sort of like a true adaptation just for a different medium, you know?
Yeah, the Justice League is it's almost the same story. Like, there's very little changed. The dialogue is cut a lot.
There's a few little things, like the flower. Like, in the comic book, like, Wonder Woman gets him, like, a replica city of Kandor.
Yep.
Because she's like, oh, you just lost the real one. And then he's like, oh, thanks for this. And then he very quickly, like, goes into his back room and, like, takes the real one and moves it. So, like, she doesn't know. I mean, that's obviously something that was a reference to something which was happening in the comics at that particular point in time, where reading it now, 30 years later, you're like, what is this random thing which is going on here?
I don't know. I kind of... I've never really thought about it like that. I don't know why there's this thing about losing Kandor, and she gets him a replica of Kandor.
I don't know what the deal was.
To me, it seems like kind of a rubbish gift. It's like, you know, like, I lost a city full of people.
No, but I think it was like... I think it wasn't like, oh, it got destroyed. I think it was like... I got the impression, anyway, that it was like, oh, because, you know, Kandor is, you know... over there in, you know, Australia now or whatever. I don't know where it was, you know, but it sounded like something happened and it was no longer miniaturized or something. And then I don't know, but I'm just speculating.
Yeah, it's quite.
But possible. Regardless, Wonder Woman gets him that, and then Batman makes the flower, whereas in the cartoon, Wonder Woman makes the flower and then Batman just gives him cash. Which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
And seems like something Batman would do.
Honestly, I don't know what... I don't know. You can't really go wrong. Like, if you're Bruce Wayne and you gotta give Superman a gift, like, that seems like a no-brainer. It's like, he's a reporter. He's not raking in the cash.
Yeah, he's kind of struggling.
You know, if I give Superman $50,000, he's gonna be like, this is a dope gift. Thanks, bro. Little fist bump and go about their day.
Yeah.
Because that's how I see their relationship. But, like, that seems like a good choice.
Yeah. Yeah. But aside from little things like that, it's basically, you know, the same thing, same story. But for Supergirl, for the girl who has everything, it's very different, you know? And, yeah. I mean, okay, you watch Supergirl.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I don't regularly. I've seen like 3 episodes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've enjoyed what I've seen, but I'm by no means an expert on the show. But as someone who watches Supergirl, what are your thoughts on the series in general?
The series in general? The entirety of the series?
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's a show that I am excited about. Like, we're not that far into it, but like... A couple episodes into season one, I was like, when a Supergirl episode drops, I'm like, oh, this is Supergirl. We got to watch this because I'm really excited about what they're doing. And like, you know, like Emily's got the ships. She's invested in the ships. My wife is like, just say it. Just get over it. You know, just deal with this Jim Olsen thing. And I'm like, I don't really care about Jimmy Olsen. That's not important to me. What's important to me is Cat Grant. She, her and Kara, that's the relationship I'm invested in because Cat Grant is awesome.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
I love that character. And I'm very interested in that show, exploring the characters and how they relate to their world. And like, it's one of those things where, like they deal with, like, Kara gets beaten down by life sometimes, and then Cat Grant would, like, say something inspiring, and she'd come back, and, like, it would work. Mm-hmm. It would work on me. I'd be like, yeah! God, she's awesome. She's no wonder Kara needs to hang out with this girl. And, like, Cat Grant vanishes for, like, most of, like, the last season, and I was like, get her back! I want her to be back so bad. It seems like she's coming back, so I'm really happy about that.
Is it? No, I thought she was leaving. Right.
Well, she was gone, and like she gave the impression that she was back. And it's like, you know she knows. Like, everyone knows that Cat Grant knows. Nobody really buys this whole, like, she doesn't know thing, right? I mean, these are things that really work on me. I love this show a lot. I think it's really well done. And it's I don't think there's a better like depiction of Superman ever. And just because it happens to be Supergirl doesn't really seem to matter at all.
Mm-hmm.
So like I don't care, you know. Like Superman shows up in the last season, and I was like, oh, that's cool. It's good. They're branching out, and they keep dropping hints about Batman. And I'm like, you know what? That would work for me if Batman like came up in the show. I would be really excited about that because I think they would get it. I think they would be able to get him right.
You know, it's interesting to me. I mean, this is all very interesting to me because, I mean, as listeners of commentary, Trek stars probably know you're not one to throw out praise lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where every time... Let me back this up. Like, first off, from the little that I've seen of Supergirl...
Mm-hmm.
And this is no reflection on the quality, okay? Because our scales are very different. Like I told you flat out, like La La Land is one of the best movies in years. You would hate it, okay? Mm-hmm. I know this for a fact, okay? When I look at Supergirl, if I were to think like, would Max like this show? My answer would be no, not at all. Right? That would be my guess. I would guess that you would not be a fan of Supergirl, that you would think that it was terrible, right? So the thing and here's the thing about this. Like if you say something is bad, I tend to dismiss it. Like, whatever, he thinks it's bad. Okay, fine. But when you say something is good, especially if it's something that I don't like, which I'm not saying I don't like Supergirl, okay? But especially if it's something that I don't like...
You hate Supergirl, you think it's garbage.
That's not what I'm saying. But if you say something is good, I take a step back and I'm like, okay, Max liked it. There's got to be something going on here. There's got to be something here, perhaps that I'm missing, you know, and it's worth sort of... taking another look or reconsidering, because like I said, you're pretty stingy when it comes to praise. So for you to say that Supergirl is great makes me want to watch this show from the beginning.
Okay, I'm gonna try to explain this in a way that I think might make it clearer. Okay, so one of the things that I find frustrating in a lot of media is I'm watching it and I'm thinking, that was a stupid and easy choice.
Mm-hmm.
That was lazy and dumb, and I know why they did it, and I'm disappointed in them.
Yeah,
that happens a lot. That happens most of the time. Supergirl is a show where I routinely go, that was not an easy... They eliminated a lot of other bad choices or less good choices before they arrived at this. And sometimes it's like, I would be terrified to make that decision. Because, like, if I were in their shoes, I would be like, I would not do that. Because that means that, like, the episode is about, like, How much am I willing to forgive my family for not being superpowered? That kind of thing. It's like, whoa, that's serious. That's hard to do. Like, that took guts. And that kind of thing is what they do on that show on a regular basis. So I'm routinely watching that show thinking, like, I'm impressed by the courage these writers have to make decisions that would scare me. Like, I like to think that if I were in their position, I would have the guts to do it. But, like, I also think, like, you know, their character choices on that show that, like, I would feel uncomfortable with because it's Supergirl and not Superman. And sometimes they deal with, like gender bias and discrimination and sexism. And, like, they do it honestly. And it's really gutsy a lot of the time, and like I can't like I find it very impressive that they've made a character who is the equal of Superman, if not, his superior, and they've made it Supergirl, and it doesn't scream desperation. It doesn't feel like they're trying to make her, strong and powerful because she's a girl. It seems like they're just saying, no, she just actually is. It doesn't really matter that she's a girl to her, but it does kind of matter to a lot of other people, and we're not going to lie about that. That kind of thing is really impressive to me. They eliminate a lot of bad choices on that show before they arrive at the one they use.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, I'll definitely have to check it out some more. I know that Kevin Smith directed an episode or two, so you know that I'm down for that and all that stuff. So yeah. So okay, so for this episode in particular, for The Girl Who Has Everything, this is, like we were saying, an adaptation of this, but not as true to the original, or not as, beholden to the original as the one that we see on Justice League Unlimited. This is definitely, an adaptation in the truest sense, in order to fit this particular story and this particular medium.
They had to adaptate it.
Yes. So you want to just kind of like talk about some of the differences here, or what it is that they do with this one?
It's not that different. Like ultimately, like Krypton's there, and it's all good. There's no like family group in the Supergirl like continuity that is desired. Like the family that she wants is not a future family; it's a past family. Like Superman kind of wants to have a kid, and like be a dad, whereas Supergirl kind of just wants to be a little girl again and have her parents around, and maybe not be a little girl again. She just wants to have her parents around and be able to, hang out with her family. Like she wants that dynamic back. So like it is, her parents are there and Krypton wasn't destroyed and it's all good. And which ultimately is very close to the Superman version. It's just, the characters are shifted around and it's a little bit out of a different story.
And they, they there's a few things in terms of like the mechanics of it all, which are different, which I think in a lot of ways are improved here. I mean, for one thing, it's not a case of like Batman just ripping this thing off of, Superman, here. They're like, we can't remove it. It's very much sort of like a face hugger in Alien, which to me makes a lot more sense because, like, when I was reading that comic, one of the things I kind of thought of was like, just cut it off, whereas they're like, wait, it's so strong and whatever.
I mean, it's like Superman has, like a basically invulnerable body. Okay, you can't get it off. Throw him into a volcano and like let that handle everything. Like he wakes up and he's like, what am I doing in magma? I guess I better fly out of the magma. And he flies out of the magma and he's like, guys, I had the weirdest dream.
Whereas like here, and this sort of it makes it more, I mean, like where Superman is like the main character in the Superman Annual, which this story occurred in, he's, I mean, you get a lot of insight into the character, but as far as like the action and everything is concerned, he's rather passive, until the end when like the main threat, I guess, is solved and he just needs to sort of like finish it off. Whereas here, by making it the type of thing where it's like we can't remove it, what we have to do is convince her to give it up. It's not like we're yanking her out and that's gonna like, wreck her like was the case with Superman. In this thing, it's like we need her to realize that this is not reality and that we need her to come back to what is real.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird, it's a weird dynamic, but like this devilish plant has two defense mechanisms. Like one is it doesn't let go of its victim until like it's got what it wanted, and the other one is it keeps its victim calm and placid by putting it into a trance that keeps them calm. Like, it seems like if the plant can, like, hold you and, you know, sit there and, like, kill you rather than let go, it doesn't really need to do anything else. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, all right, like, ultimately, they would just shoot the plant. Like, so we need to give it some sort of other thing. It has to have the facehugger response where you try to pull it and it grabs tighter.
Yeah.
That's the facehugger logic. Mm-hmm. Like, because that's what you would do.
Yeah.
You know, the facehugger has, you know, another defense mechanism, which is its acid blood, which is kind of the same dynamic.
So, yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. But then of course, there's also the, you know, sort of, well, as far as the character of Kara is concerned, it's different in that, you know, I don't know, at least I got the impression with the comic, he's just like, oh, I'm here. And, you know, like he's hanging out with his son or whatever, and he's like, I remember you being born and everything, but I don't think you're real, you know?
Yeah.
And he's sort of like coming to this realization or whatever that it's, you know, not the same, that it's not reality. Whereas, like, at the start of the story, he's just like, oh, I'm here. I'm awake. It's cool. You know, but like in...
Krypton's nice.
Yeah, Krypton's nice. That was a weird thing that my dad did back in the day when he said, you know, that the place was going to blow up, but it didn't. So that was, you know, I guess every cloud has a silver lining.
Just kidding, Kyle. It's all my fault.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, like, the difference, I guess, in this story is that when Kara, like, wakes up, you know, on Krypton, she's like, what's going on? Yeah. Like, I was just back in Metropolis or wherever she is. I don't know what city she's in. I'm sorry. And, you know, now here I am on Krypton. Krypton.
Krypton.
As as Marlon Brando would say. And, yeah, I, you know, so there's that. Which, that part to me doesn't really work as well because there's like the, wait a minute. And then there's the whole thing where it's going back, where to me that doesn't seem like as much of a stretch for her to believe that, you know, when Kyler Lee comes through the thing and is like, we need to go back home, you remember me, I'm your sister. Like, at that point I think Supergirl would kind of be like, yeah, you're right. That's why I guess that's why when I woke up this morning I kind of thought that this was all not real, you know. But she's, like, resistant to that, then. She's, like, resistant to change, no matter what the change is, you know? But I don't know. So that, I mean, I guess I kind of see it from, like, a television standpoint where it's, like, again, you're watching it from the character's perspective and you're watching the show from the character's perspective, and it's weird if, you know, all of a sudden she's just like, hey, I'm hanging out on Krypton, you know, and everything's normal. Whereas you can do that in a comic book and it's not as weird, you know? But also that's how they start off the show. Like it's structured differently where on the episode of Supergirl, she wakes up and she's on Krypton and it's like, oh, this is weird. What's going on? You know, it's like the cold open, the tease, right?
Yeah, why not?
Whereas in the comic book, it's starts off from Batman, Wonder Woman, and Robin's perspective, and they find Superman, and then I take that back, because they do have a little, like, one-page prologue where he's, like, hanging out on Krypton, but it's so weird,
it's a little disjointed.
Yeah.
But, like, that's sort of the thing that, like, I would love to see an adaptation that didn't have any, like, real-world action until the flower was removed.
Yeah.
Because, like, being told explicitly, this is not a real thing, and then seeing what it is, that's kind of annoying. It's like, yeah, we can see what's going on in the real world, and we know that it's not, like, actually happening. But I think it would be pretty cool to, like, test the audience to see how willing they were to believe that maybe the entire thing, other than Krypton being fine, was the dream.
In the comic, I think it works pretty well, because I think having those parallel storylines is pretty interesting. And, you know, I think they both work on their own as well. Whereas in the show, I'm much more interested in what's going on in the real world than I am what's going on Krypton, you know? Like, to me, there's not even that much going on Krypton. She's just kind of like, and I mean, part of that, I think, is because I'm not familiar with the characters. I don't know their dynamic or anything like that. But, you know, I don't know. To me, I prefer the real world stuff to the fantasy stuff in the Supergirl.
Yeah, I get that. Like, that's sort of the thing. Like, what that credibility strain when Alex shows up and is like, hey, you know, this is a dream and you're not really here. The reason you think, why is she doubting her? Like, why is she, like, being all suspicious of this action? It is because we know that it's real. We know mm-hmm. that she's the real thing and she's from the real world and that this is a dream sequence. But, like, if you did a convincing, like, 30-minute, like, sequence of, like, you were having a very bad thing happen to you. You were dreaming and having a nightmare. It's pretty messed up. You've got some serious psychological problems. Have you taken your medication? This is the real world. Earth is not real. I mean, it exists, but you've never been there. That's crazy. You know, like, that kind of thing. If they had tried really hard to actually convince the audience that it was not a dream sequence, and then Alex showed up and said, this is a dream sequence. Earth is real. Come back to Earth with me. Like, we might be a little bit more inclined to go, oh, that would be tricky.
Yeah, but I don't think it's really about that, because the other thing that you have to do is create paradise. You've got to create the perfect moment for Kara. Mm-hmm. So by saying, like, you know, you're hallucinating, you know, you're on medication or whatever, all that stuff.
I don't know. To me, like, if I were Supergirl and somebody said to me, like, you know, hey, that whole thing where, like, Krypton was destroyed, that was, like, a psychotic break. And it's all good now. The psychotic break narrative is the most plausible explanation for why everything's fine now.
Sure, but at the same time, like, I don't know, to me, it almost makes more sense to just ignore it like they did in the first one, in the comic, yeah. You know? And just be like, this is reality, you know?
Yeah.
And then just have that thing maybe, like, in the back of her head, like, something's... I know this is reality, but I have these memories...
Yeah, that's sort of the problem of, like, how much of a dream is it? Because in a dream, you know, like, you can be like, you know, like, okay, so I'm Han Solo, I'm flying the Millennium Falcon, everyone knows I'm Han Solo, there's no doubt in my mind that I'm Han Solo, you know, I've never met Luke Skywalker, maybe I'll meet Luke Skywalker. And, like, it's all perfectly logical that, like, you're anticipating meeting someone for the first time and you already know their name and their backstory. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of logic exists in dreams. But, like, in these storylines, it seems more like the dream that they're placed in is a sort of virtual reality.
Yeah.
It also includes false memories. But, like, Supergirl's thing doesn't include a lot of false memories. It's just like, no, that you remember all that stuff? Oh, that's a shame. That didn't happen. Like, mm-hmm. don't ask questions about it. But, like, you know that it's not real.
Yeah.
I would like to see somebody test the audience by really challenging them to come to terms with the possibility that maybe the entire show up until now was lie.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. That'd be cool. But I think the approach that they took here works for what they're trying to do.
Oh, definitely. That definitely works. It would be a pretty jarring thing to spend an entire episode trying to convince you that the rest of the show was not true.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, shows have done that. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and shows have definitely done that before. And
yeah.
I think generally speaking, it's usually really, really hard to buy that.
Well, they did it on Buffy. And ultimately, I think they came down on the side of, yeah, maybe the show isn't real.
Well, I guess they did that on Deep Space Nine with.
No, I disagree.
No, with Benny Russell.
Far Beyond the Is it Far Beyond the Stars or Beyond the Stars?
Far Beyond the Stars.
Far Beyond the Stars. Yeah, no, that Benny Russell is real. Deep Space Nine is real. It's all real. There are different levels of reality. They all simultaneously exist.
I mean, that's definitely a conversation which we've had, which is really interesting. And that's could very well be accurate. I don't know. So I think we're in agreement that this is a good adaptation of the story for this particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing to me which doesn't really work is the title now, For the Girl Who Has Everything, because that sort of implies that it's a gift, but it's not a gift anymore because it's not her birthday, but Honestly, who cares? Right.
It was in a box.
Was it?
Yeah. Like
Okay.
it's actually like the plant is introduced in the previous episode.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't watch the previous episode. Sorry.
It doesn't
Yeah.
matter.
And I mean, yeah, as far as the show is concerned, like I've talked about this on a previous episode somewhere, you know, but like, I mean, we're living in a world where on CBS there's a show with like Maxwell Lord, you know? Just like there. What's going on? What's going on?
Oh, it's not on CBS anymore.
I know it's not on CBS anymore, but my point is that like, you know, Maxwell Lord was like super obscure character who, you know, no one aside from people who hung out in comic book stores knew about back in the day. And now he's on a major television show on a major network.
And he was that Fastlane guy.
And he was the Fastlane guy. Yes.
Yeah.
Which, and speaking of like shows like Fastlane, which were canceled before their time and which very few people remember, you know, watching this show with Kyler Lee in it, do you remember Girls Club?
Of course, I remember Girls Club.
Do you remember how the
Those
two of
three
us?
episodes were great.
I don't think anyone has loved a television show more than the two of us loved Girls Club.
I was so excited about that. It was so funny
I
and
couldn't
cool.
wait, and they had the posters up in the
David E.
mall.
Kelly, man.
He's the best.
I miss him.
Now he's doing stuff.
Yeah, but I don't see any of it.
Goliath? Did you watch Goliath?
No, I don't watch Goliath.
Oh, there you go. I
Is
haven't watched it yet
it
either, but
funny?
I don't think so. I think it's serious, but
I think there's a part of me that's just like if he does another lawyer show and he does like another like come defend this guy on death row and lose storyline, I'm gonna just like throw something through a TV screen because like I love every time I watch it, but every time I watch it, I'm like, stop doing lawyer shows.
yeah.
They don't last long enough.
He should do a superhero show. He should do something with like a female DC
I
superhero.
would be very interested to see what he could do with a female DC continuity superhero.
Yeah.
I think the question is, like, what sort of business does she manage?
Yes. Well, maybe we'll never know.
Yeah.
But yes. So, okay. So here we are. You know, we've seen this, whatever. Now, you know, like we were saying, this episode's written by Ted Sullivan,
Yeah.
who is a writer on Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
Based on his online presence, you know, his interactions with people on Twitter and whatnot, it's very, 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 very clear that he is a big fan of Star Trek, you know, prior to working on the show. And I think it's
Nerd alert.
interesting. I think it's interesting, you know, looking at this where he's, you know, because I'm assuming he's a big comic book fan as well. I think that's been established.
Yeah, you kind of have to be.
You know, here he is adapting a classic Superman story for the Supergirl TV show. And here we have him working on a Cage era Star Trek TV show. And I guess my question is, my hypothetical question is, how do you think For the Girl Who Has Everything demonstrates or indicates what his approach to disco will be?
I don't think there's a rosebud in there, you know?
Yeah, I mean it's like more of like a broad thing, but
I think that like what I take away is there is a nuance to bringing a storyline like this into the continuity of Supergirl, and it implies a kind of understanding of like the functional modular components of a storyline and the ability to take those modular components out, like dust off like the proprietary elements and snap them into position in the new environment. It's a very like Lego logic behind this because like they're moving parts. Like these are moving parts and he's taking them out of one machine and putting them in another machine. And that's not super easy to do without, you know, grinding some pieces to dust. And none of them seem to be ground to dust in this version. It seemed like, you know, the pieces were placed intelligently with an understanding of how they'll interact in the larger whole. And, like, there's a part of me that kind of wants to see the pieces get ground to dust, because I like it when, you know, a story breaks down and the writers have no place to go. But that's usually because they're doing a bad job. And, like I think that if everything fell apart, it would be interesting if they had to, like, start over again, because they might get a chance to get some things right. Supergirl is not a situation where I feel that way. Like, I still kind of want to see things fall apart and, like, put them back together again, because, you know, it's just always cool. You know, if they did a post-apocalyptic storyline, I'd be okay with that. Yeah. But, like, the ability to incorporate a storyline like this into Supergirl's continuity is impressive. And the main, like, the only Rosebud in this is, seems to be good at this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty much in agreement. I think, you know, I agree with basically what you said. I have the sort of same take on it. I think what this episode shows is that while he does have a firm handle on what has come before, he's not so locked into it that what we're going to get is just basically a bad copy of what has come before.
Right.
I think what we're going to get is basically a repurposing of elements. And I'm not saying that he's going to be remaking episodes or whatever, but what I'm saying
I'm looking forward to when Star Trek Discovery does The Way of the Gun.
Yeah. I don't think that that's going to happen. It's not The Way of the Gun. It's Spectre of the Gun.
Spectre of the Gun. Damn it.
Yeah.
Way of the Gun's a movie.
If you want to back that up and do the joke
again. No! I made a mistake. It stays in.
Okay, fine. You know, I don't think that he's going to, you know, do that, obviously. But I think, you know, he has, like, I mean, assuming, but I think he has, like, a fundamental understanding of what it is that makes Star Trek Star Trek, and he's going to find a way to incorporate that, the essence of Star Trek, phasers, into this show. Yes, phasers. It's all about the phasers and the communicators and, you know, phasers. The thing. It's that's what Star Trek is about, mm-hmm. And I think that, you
people
know,
with a certain color clothing getting killed randomly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's going to see those things and be like, yes, this... No, I mean, the exact opposite of that, of course, you know, is what we're talking about, you know? And I think that that's really cool and ultimately, you know, important. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something which, you know, I've been thinking about this type of thing a lot because I just saw the new ape movie, The War for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, The War for Planet of the Apes.
And, you know, there's, like, a whole thing in there that they do, and I didn't pick up on this until, like, basically the end of the movie, where, like, the sort of rogue human element, the rogue human platoon or whatever it is, it's called, like, Alpha Omega or something, and I'm like, oh, that's the thing from the second movie where the guys were underground with the thing and the bomb. Yeah. It's not that at all, but thematically that's what it is. You know? It's like these sort of, like, you know, sort of way, way, way outside of the norm humans doing this thing in a very sort of, like, radicalized way. And I mean, like, that's the type of thing. That's what I see basically going on here with For the Girl Who Has Everything and stuff like that. It's like, we're not going to just do a beat for beat translation of For the Man Who Has Anything, but we're going to take what that story did and we're going to do it here. You know, it's basically the exact same thing that you said, but whatever. And I'm hoping that that's how it's going to translate
I haven't seen this Ape movie.
Star Trek. It's not out yet. I saw an advanced screening.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But it's,
how does it end?
I'm not going to say how it ends. I will say, you know what? You know what? I will say how it ends. It ends in the most appropriate way it possibly could. Not to get off on an ape track here, but this is the conclusion of a trilogy, and it's very rare, especially when, like, these trilogies are planned out, like, years in advance and then are modified when, you know, certain things hit and certain things don't. It's very, very rare for a trilogy these days to have three satisfying parts and like that work together as like a cohesive whole.
Yeah.
That's what these movies do. It's kind of amazing what they do in this movie. It's really, really, really good. I highly recommend it. So,
okay.
There you go. Anyway, okay, so it's been fun talking about For the Girl Who Has Everything today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
That is part of the Guardian guarding forever. I guess he does a pretty bad job guarding forever. If he might just jump right through and ruin history. But
That is kind of a strange thing that, the Guardian has no gate.
The Orb.
What's at the heart of jazz? It's improvising. Improvisation is a very, very important part of jazz. And that's what they have to do on DS9. From the moment they stepped on that station, they've had to improvise and find their way and make do with what they have.
To the journey!
So Janeway knits.
She does knit. I wonder when she finds time.
Maybe she does it on the bridge when it's quiet. She pulls out her knitting bag and her needles and just...
That's a fabulous mental image.
She's like, Chakotay, hand me that bag behind you. I need to knit.
Warp 5.
I don't know. I think given the story, given the place in the overall story of Enterprise and everything like that, I mean, they weren't really hardcore into the killing of people yet, you know? That didn't come until season 3, you know?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, wherever. And please leave us a star rating and a review. That really helps out, and we really appreciate that. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find us on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most other third-party apps. And you can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. If you want to contact us, we'd love to hear from you. You can find the Babel Conference on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook and we'll come right up. That's our listener forum where you can talk about this show or anything else that you want to talk about. If you'd like to send us an email, you can contact us on our website. Just go to trek.fm/contact and then select Stage 9 and it'll be sent right to us. Or you can find the network on Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And any place people can find you on the internet, Max?
I'm on the internet.
Okay. You can find Max on the internet at commentarytrackstars.com, where the two of us do a show called Commentary Track Stars, which we haven't had an episode in a few weeks, but we've got a time travel one in the bag, and we've got some stuff plan for the future, and it'll be up there soon, so definitely head on over there and check it out. And you can find me also doing a show called Great Shot Kid on thenerdparty.com and a show called Soderbergh 2828 on talkfilmsociety.com, and you can find me on Twitter at mumbles3k. We'd like to thank our associate producers today, Jeff Sutter and Chris Steftenagel. Thank you very much for your support. We really appreciate it. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. And you can, take a look at our perks, which include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. So head on over there. We really appreciate anything you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. So that's pretty much it for today. Thank you very
much. I thought about putting a beat under those words and maybe wrapping them out.
Maybe next week. Right. Maybe next week. Thanks for filling in for John today. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
It's good talking about Supergirl. And if I can rope you into next week, what I would love to do is a side-by-side comparison of Measure of a Man and Ted 2. Does that sound like something you'd be interested in?
What?